Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, how are you this fine April Eve, good sir?
I'm okay. I'm surviving. I'm dealing with stuff. I'm dealing with my personal issues, but I'm dealing with other stuff.
Okay.
Beyond that, but I'm like sort of taking care of the stuff. I'm doing that adulting stuff. Taking care of shit that I should have taken care of a long time ago. But it feels good to like finally get that off your plate, you know?
Yeah. Taking care of business and working overtime. Workout.
That's exactly what I was saying.
I'm pretty sure that's what that song was about, right?
Yeah. Like, who was it that did that song? I know that song, Taking Care of Business. It was who was the band?
Bachman Turner Overdrive, I want to say.
Business. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was BTO. That's something I should know. Like, I mean, I just say that because, like, for a while there, I was, like, really into classic rock.
Yeah.
And, like, I would just, like, get all these CDs. Like, remember those Time Life CD infomercials? Like, that was my shit. Like, I would be like, oh, these songs are rocking. And, like, I would just, like, jam out to the Time Life CD.
Did you actually order the set?
No. What am I, Mighty Bunny? No.
All right.
You know, I would just go to, like, the library and then get the CDs from the library and then jam out
then burn the CD. Yeah, I did
that.
Yeah,
that's how you do it.
Yeah. Right. I remember years and years ago, I was working as a poll worker for some election or the other, and a guy I befriended that day was like, yeah, do you ever like just borrow CDs from the library and then take them home and then burn them onto your iTunes? And I was like, no, but I'm gonna.
Yeah. It's the age of Napster, baby. That's the other.
Yeah.
Or Morpheus or LimeWire if you're so inclined.
Oh boy. Okay. So many obsolete services.
I know, right? Spending all day downloading one song and it's not the right song because somebody mislabeled it or some shit.
Oh yes.
It's like, this isn't They Might Be Giants. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, that was so common on Napster. So many people were like, oh, yeah, this is, yeah. And then you'd have to label it, and it's like, no, it's not formatted correctly, damn it.
This is the remix, god damn it.
They used a colon instead of an M dash. What the hell?
Oh,
what is this, amateur hour?
My whole day is ruined.
Ah!
Ah!
The thing I got isn't exactly how I want it.
There has to be a better way.
Then the commercial comes on. Hey, man, is that Freedom Rock, man? Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man.
So I just looked it up. Yeah, it is Bachman Turner Overdrive. I knew it was.
Nice. You called it. You called it, my friend.
Canada's finest.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right, but enough of our blabbermouthing about the classic rock. We got a documentary to talk about, my good sir.
We do, and not the documentary that you might necessarily think. We know there's a new Lorne Michaels documentary out right now, and we want to see it. We want to cover it.
We are
yearning to cover it. We are planning to cover it. And, I had car troubles this week, so I can't get out to a theater now. So
I wasn't going to say anything. I just was like, If you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it. But.
Yeah. So I think I can say that. I'm not going to go into all the ins and outs of it. But yeah, like making it to a movie theater this last weekend was just not in the cards for me, unfortunately. Mm. So yeah. So we're putting a pin in that and we're like, hey. Why don't we do that documentary about Jim Downey, the SNL great. Called Downey Wrote That, and it is a documentary that's been streaming on Peacock since October 17th of 2025. So, yeah, it's taken us a little while to get to this. So,
taken us a while to get to it, but we are finally here. We are finally doing it. Downey Wrote That, directed by Brent Hodge, who is the same fellow that directed the Chris Farley doc, I Am Chris Farley.
Okay. All right.
I guess.
That's maybe why he got picked for this job. They like the job he did on that one. And
yeah. And it's I think when people heard that this was coming out, it was pretty interesting because, I mean, you rarely hear about a documentary about a writer of, I wouldn't say that, like an SNL writer. kind of, because, like, I mean, for the most part, the average person isn't too familiar about who writes on SNL. Like, with the exception of...
They toil in obscurity.
Yes. I mean, there are some, like, you know, writers that are in the limelight, like, you know, your Tina Fey's, your John Mulaney's.
And there are some writers on SNL who've crossed over into being cast members. Like, I mean, Jason Sudeikis started as a writer. Bowen Yang started as a writer on SNL.
Yeah, Dismukes.
Dismukes. And only those three. Nobody else ever happened to TFA and others. I mean, there's loads. And you also see, like, writers pop up all the time, often in, like, the audience Q&As on a monologue. I'm sure Jim Downey did a lot of those. Paul Appel, Emily Spivey, all these people. I mean, because it's like somebody who's there who can deliver a line, but they're not as immediately recognizable as a cast member. So, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I mean, your Smigels and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they were coming out with this, a whole documentary about Jim Downey, mm-hmm. who's a huge integral part of the SNL history, who, like, only, you know, super comedy nerds like us would know about.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Like, if you showed his face to people, and I think a lot of people would be like, oh, hey, that guy. It's that guy. So, yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, the average person, I don't believe, would know who Jim Downey is. Like, I talked to my wife. Like, I mean, I talked to my wife about him, and, like, she doesn't really know who he is.
And when is the divorce coming through?
Oof. Well, look, we're working it out. We're in therapy right now. We're trying to save this marriage, man.
Okay. All right. I mean,
I still love her, man. I still love her.
I mean, you've got some work to do. Yes. Obviously. Obviously.
Exactly. We're building bridges.
This
is all. But enough about my. But nothing about my marriage. Let's talk about Jim Downey.
Your failing marriage.
Yes.
Oh. Living a lie, a sham.
Oh, my God. Oh, Oiga Vault. Jim Downey. The fact that they did a documentary about him was, like, really interesting, I thought. And then, because, like you said, like I said, people like us know about his huge contributions to the show. And, like, I do like how they kind of shone a light on just. It seemed like with this documentary, they just kind of focused on the work. They didn't really talk about, like, his personal life that much in this. His childhood.
We just get, like, a little bit of peek of his personal life towards the end of the doc. Yeah, but it is mostly about the work. It's a relatively short doc. It's 1 hour and 6 minutes. I could have gone for more, but I am, I am a comedy geek, just, you know, inject that straight into my veins. I could have taken a whole hour and a half of Jim Downey.
Yeah.
That's me.
That's you. That's me too. So, like, they talk to a lot of people who have worked at Jim. Of course, you got your Sandlers, your Daryl Hammonds. Mm-hmm. I liked how they talked to David Letterman, who was a part of this. And he said, Lorne has found yet another way to make money by doing documentaries on his staff members.
Yes. That was, and I mean, yeah, Lorne Michaels, he says early on that Jim Downey is, like, ground zero in the world of comedy. And I mean, this, I thought I knew a fair amount about Jim Downey, more than the average person, but I learned more about Downey, and it's like, oh, holy crap. He wrote that sketch. And just so many sketches. And it did give you more of a feel of his style of comedy and the trademarks and the hallmarks of his work. Just cool stuff, especially if you're any kind of comedy geek, or especially an SNL or David Letterman comedy geek. I think you will enjoy this.
Yeah, like they like you said, like, they kind of touched on things that are very are hallmarks of a Jim Downey sketch, like the over-explaining of something, or, like, as Mulaney called it, hyper nuance, where Downey likes it when someone painstakingly and laboriously explains something that doesn't really need to be explained and kind of gets it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Like the Change Bank was the example I gave, classic SNL sketch from the 80s. And Downey stars in it, which was very unusual for the time. And he's talking about how, like, you know, we're going to work with your needs. We're not going to give you 2,000 nickels.
Unless that's what you want.
Yeah. And he's just, I mean, it's just, and it's just belaboring the point, and it becomes funny in that belaboring of the point. And yeah, that is a sketch that has lived rent free in my head for, oh my gosh, nearly 40 years now. So
it's, I mean, it's such a fantastic sketch. I don't know. Part of me wonders, well, like, would a sketch like that work today? Because it's, the humor is so dry. It's so dry. And like, if you're not paying attention, it could seem just like a regular sketch, because they play it so straight, and like, there's no real hints of any joking at all in this sketch.
Because it's basically a commercial parody.
Right.
So, and some of SNL's commercial parodies, they really ape the style of commercial so well that it really is, it could fool you into being the real thing. And it really did look like a bank commercial.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I also like that other sketch to show, the Global Century Investment sketch, where it was like Chris Parnell talking to a number of investors. And
I'd forgotten that sketch completely.
I did too, till they showed it. And I was like, oh, this is really hilarious. And you're talking about, like, we want to be straightforward and honest with all of our clients. You know, that's what, you know, we'll probably take your money and invest it in things that probably won't pay off for you in the long end, but will make us richer.
And Amy Poehler, like, raises her hand, and she's like, I must confess, I came here with the intention of killing you, but I really appreciate your honesty. I mean, and she just says that totally straight. And that's the other hallmark of a Jim Downey sketch, is like the straight delivery. He's deadly serious in his comedy. There's nothing to tip you off that it's a joke. And I like that they did that to just sort of orient you early on as to like what his voice is like.
Right. And like another thing they also talk about in a Jim Downey sketch is how he'll take a non-existing problem and give you an ineffective solution. And that's how we get that the Sleepy Time Rat Control commercial.
Another one I'd forgotten until they started running it. And I was like, oh, my God. Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in that one, it's basically, the problem is, I think it's Victoria Jackson and Dana Carvey, their house is infested with sewer rats.
She opens up like the cover of their toilet, and there are like three or four rats in there, and
like big as beavers.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And I am, your rats are like,
It's pretty gross.
Yeah. But the evocative phrase sewer rats, it's not just any rats, it is a sewer rat.
Yeah, because I think even Conan said at this point, like having mice in your home is a problem.
Right.
Having sewer rats isn't really that big an issue. Right. And like in the commercial, it's for a Sleepy Time Rat Control, and it's like a rat control that you put out for the rats to eat. It doesn't kill them, it just puts them to sleep. So you just have a bunch of sleeping rats in your home.
And Conan points out that after the rats are asleep, they don't do anything to clear out the rats. It is just the rats are literally asleep on the floor. So the couple can now sleep secure in their bed. But at some point, the rats are going to wake up.
Yeah, you still got a house full of rats. What the fuck?
As I said, non-existent problem and ineffective solution, which, so funny. So funny. Like, two things that Downey said kind of early on, which I really like. He said, writing comedy is either really easy or impossible. That sums it up beautifully, I think. Because, like, I mean, we are both nominally stand-up comics.
Nominally.
I mean, you know, you can't legally disprove that we have done stand-up comedy.
I'd like to see you try.
You could make a good case. I'm not saying you couldn't make a good case. I'm just saying you couldn't prove it beyond the shadow of a doubt. But
no jury would convict us.
Sometimes when you're writing, it can like really be flowing, and it's just flowing out of you, and it's so easy. Or you're just like banging your head against the wall trying to come up with something, anything. So it's like those two extremes. It's not like a faucet you can turn on and off, you know.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those things where either the jokes, like you said, it's come right out of you, fully formed, or you're literally just, staying up all night just trying to get something funny out, like you're constipated or something.
Yeah, it's just like pulling
teeth. Just trying to squeeze out the funny.
Yeah, and he also says there aren't a million different ways to tell a joke. So Ooh. It's like, it's about like finding that just that right phrasing or that right combination of words. And it, I mean, there really is an alchemy to it. So,
yeah, it's like one of those things, like I never really thought about it until I started doing comedy about, mm-hmm. you know, like how there is a science to doing a good joke. Cause like, I mean, the way I've kind of realized it is, yeah, like when you see a comedian tell a joke and it makes you laugh, but then you tell that same joke to somebody, or you see somebody tell that same joke to somebody, and like the person telling it kind of gets it wrong, and they mangle it. So like, it's not just the words that made you laugh the first time. It's like something else the comedian did. It could be like the word choice or your inflection in the voice, or
their manner, or just their look.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Like it, like I'm sure if I went up and did your act word for word, and don't believe me, I, it's not like I haven't tried. is like I'm sure I would not get the same laughs that you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like a whole. I got a whole thing to it, baby. There's a lot of magic in these jokes that I'd be spitting out.
Yeah, exactly. I've always thought it would be great to do a comedy show sometime where a bunch of comedians, we go up, we all put our names in a hat, and you can only do this with a group of comics who know each other fairly well, though. And then we all pull a name out of the hat. And then whoever's name you pulled out of the hat, you have to go up and do your half-remembered version of their act.
Oh, my God. I kind of love that, but kind of hate that.
So do I, and I came up with the idea. I'm like, I love this idea. I don't know if I would have the guts to do it.
Yeah, I would just be like, you're mangling my beautiful words. My children. You're killing my children. My beautiful
babies. But I think it would be so interesting to see.
It would be. You'd be like, how's it go again? Something.
Yeah. Maybe if you could have the other comics sitting up there on the stage, like the Benson interruption or something.
Ooh,
nice. And so the other comic could be like, no, you're getting it wrong. Yeah, give him a buzzer or something. Yeah,
exactly. Incorrect.
That would be fun. But, I mean, like another sketch, the dissing your dog sketch. I've forgotten that. And that's from like the Will Ferrell days where he's like, oh, you're eating dog food again. Okay, well, you're a freaking dog. Wow. So funny.
That was a good one. I vaguely remember that one, but yeah, mm-hmm. seeing it again was that was hilarious. And then they go into another sketch he wrote for the John Malkovich episode with the mm-hmm. Johnny Canal, which I don't remember at all.
I think the big thing that people remember from the John Malkovich show, and this is like sometime in the late 80s, early 90s, was John Malkovich like reading to the kids.
Yes. Yeah.
And this was another one where I also remember him as the driftwood sculptor.
Oh, right. Yeah. With Nora Dunn and Jan Hooks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maker of driftwood things. But here he's Johnny Canal. He's presenting an idea. And this is like back in the early days of the country.
And yeah.
Like, we should have canals connecting everywhere in the country, like going through towns, going between towns, going through cities, going cross country. And they just have the president, Phil Hartman is the president, just asking him, explaining it in great detail, like why a canal's connecting everywhere in the U.S. is a bad idea.
How much is this going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? Who's going to build it? Would these be tolls or would it be free canals? And you just do like a slow zoom in on John Malkovich's face as he realizes he hasn't thought any of this through. Where he's like,
he has not thought about the logistics of it at all. He just likes the idea of canals,
a system of canals.
Yeah.
That is pretty funny.
Yeah. I found another quote from Downey here. He says, I wanted to generate jokes that no one had ever seen before because they came out of a unique premise. And he obviously does have a unique comedy mind.
Yes, absolutely. And that probably came from his days at the Harvard Lampoon. Like like I said earlier in this, they go into his background a little bit,
Yeah.
But really, like, I didn't even know he grew up where he grew up. They don't even say where in the U.S. he grew up. I didn't, like, I looked it up and he grew up in, like, Joliet, Illinois, but they don't mention that in the doc at all.
Yeah.
Which I thought was strange. But yeah, like, so I mean, I found out, like, he, I mean, what he says in the doc is, like, he's talking to Molly Shannon and looks like either his kitchen or her kitchen or somebody's kitchen.
Just a random stranger's kitchen. They just did a home invasion. The owners of the home, they were, like, tied up just off frame.
Yes.
It was really sick. It was in all the papers.
They're hog-tied in the basement. Yeah. It's pretty, it's pretty disturbing. I think this, this doc might be evidence, actually, now that I really think about it. But yeah, they talk about how he was more of a class wit than a class clown, how his dad loved practical jokes and liked to get him in on it. And then Jim really wanted to go to Harvard after reading the Lampoon, and he ended up becoming the president of the Lampoon. And he apparently he majored in, like, Russian studies.
Yeah, but, he said that.
But, like, he basically was just at the Lampoon all day.
So, yeah, and he said, like, I mean, he wasn't majoring in comedy, but he was nominally a Russian studies major or Russian literature major. I forget which.
That's where the big money is.
Russian something or other. But he spent so much time at the Lampoon. I'm like, I think he still graduated. So, I mean,
he did.
Don't get into Harvard without being a smart person or or having very rich parents, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned how he was there when they John Wayne went to Cambridge. The Lampoon asked John Wayne to go to Cambridge.
They invited him to get roasted. And John Wayne apparently was a good enough sport to do that. That's pretty cool.
That's wild. Yeah, because I think this was, like, but you know, I know he's, like, very unpopular with, like, the younger generation because he's, like, a staunch conservative and he's not, you know, he's not with this hippie nonsense. So, like, to have him there.
He said some rather racist things as well.
You don't say.
Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of that, but.
What?
Yeah. Well, see, Darren, there's this thing called racism.
Racism?
Let me explain to you how it works.
Lay it on me, brother.
I'm not going to do that.
Let me rap to you, kids. What's up?
I'm not going to do that. It's going to be the clip taken out of concept, out of context. It'll be like, white man explains racism to black man.
John Trumbull canceled.
Even if I'm doing it ironically, it would not be good.
Yeah. You know, you would have messed up, like, when you get invited to do, like, you know, Theo Vaughn's podcast. You're like, no, we need to hear your side, brother.
Oh my God. Oh no. I've wasted my life. I've made a big mistake.
Want to come on Legion of Skanks and talk some talk? Some real talk?
Is Legion of Skanks a real show?
It is. It's a podcast, and it's done in New York with, like, some New York comics. You never heard of it?
Okay. All right.
It is.
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, okay.
I have a Google alert on Skanks. I mean, I get Google alerts on Skanks in my inbox, like, every Sunday.
I think it's a different thing you're thinking about.
Oh, okay.
It's all right. Yeah. Well,
I mean, so I should expand the search, is what you're saying.
Expand the Skank search. Yes.
Okay.
Say that three times fast.
A wider net for the Skanks.
Yes. Skanky net.
Another thing that freaked me out on the Harvard Lampoon, they showed the cover of their Life parody, because, like, a thing that the Harvard Lampoon would do was they'd do parodies of famous magazines. And
yes.
They did a Life parody while Downey was there, and they showed the cover, and it was like, holy crap, because the visual was, I believe it was an egg with a globe painted on it, and then the egg was broken open, and the yolk is spilling out.
Oh.
It freaked me out, because when I was back in high school, our, like, senior variety show, our theme was It's the End of the World as We Know It, because it's not too far removed from that being a hit song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the visual I came up with for the poster. And
shit.
I had no idea it had ever been done anywhere before, because, you know, it was like 1990. Internet wasn't a thing. You couldn't, like, look this up. And I was like, oh, holy crap. I, like, inadvertently duplicated.
Wow.
They did on a Harvard Lampoon Life parody. I was like, that's freaky.
That is wild.
I was so proud of myself, because it took me like 2 weeks to come up with that idea. I remember I was like, I was struggling to come up with like an interesting visual, but wow.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man. Look, you could have been in the Lampoon.
I guess. Well, you know. Yes. Look, I went to the University of Evansville. It was fine.
There you go. That should be their slogan.
Yeah.
University of Evansville. It's fine.
U of E. We're fine. You know, we have a sister campus in England. So
there you go.
Cool. Yeah, blimey. I travel a lot in England.
Come on over to Evansville, don't you love?
Anyway.
That sounded Jamaican.
Yeah, you kind of did.
So, okay. Well, I tried. I tried.
But I also like that, you know, they did a Cosmo pinup of Henry Kissinger that was a parody of the infamous Burt Reynolds Cosmo pinup.
Hubba hubba.
Yeah. So Downey, he graduates from Harvard, and then like a year or two later, he's going to SNL. SNL is still in its early days. He joins in the second season, and he shares an office with Mr. Bill Murray, because he and Bill Murray joined the show at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, at this time, he got a job there at, he was 24 when he joined. He's like one of the youngest people there. That's pretty dope.
He started out as the youngest staff member. By the time he left SNL, he was the oldest staff member. So
wild.
Wow. Yeah, wild. And he wrote so many great sketches along the way. I mean, Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
Mm.
The Lord and Lady Douchebag.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, give me a sandwich and a juice bag, and there is nothing we cannot do. Wow.
Oh, my God. I mean, the Irwin Mainway sketch, he wrote a few of those. He also, it seemed like he wrote that Superman house party sketch that we talked about on our Superman episode.
Yeah, they showed clips of that, and I'm like, I mean, I salute you, Mr. Downey. This comic fan salutes you. That is a brilliant sketch. Very, very funny.
And
they talk about like kind of the mass exodus that happened after the fifth year of the original SNL.
Yeah, yeah, like 1980.
Yeah,
pretty much Lauren left, and everybody kind of left with not kind of everybody did leave with him, including Jim Downey. But luckily enough, he got scooped up by Mr. David Letterman, who called him to be part of his writing staff. He was putting together for Late Night.
I just want to back up a bit. There was a great quote from Lorne where they're kind of talking about the end of the original cast era of SNL. And Lorne says, if you want to kill someone talented, let them do everything they want.
Mm.
Which, that really got me. Because it's like, if you're unlimited and you don't have any sort of limitations or any box to bounce against. Yeah, that's a good way to just kind of burn out or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought that was very, very insightful.
So, no, that's pretty, that's pretty sharp talk there, Mr. Michaels.
But he goes to Letterman, and Letterman's just starting up at this point. Like Letterman started, I think, around 1982.
Yes, 82.
82. So this is, you know, not too long after. They don't really get into what Downey was doing with himself for that year and a half, 2 years. I don't know if he's just had enough to live on without getting writing gigs, or if he was doing other stuff that wasn't worth mentioning. I don't know.
You know, so might have been a spy working for working undercover. You don't know.
Ooh, a Chuck Barris thing.
Okay. Yes.
All right, we got a little Confessions of a Dangerous Mind situation happening. Okay. All right.
Name's Downey. Jim Downey.
Yeah, we'll say that in lieu of any better information.
Yeah, he was probably jet setting in Monaco. Taking out Dr. No's people, henchmen.
Yeah, killing people for the CIA.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, and Letterman says, this may be the funniest human I know. This is David freaking Letterman.
Right? Man, the hilarious icon.
My God, if Letterman ever said that about me, you could just, I mean, bury me happy. I would die immediately of a heart attack, but I would be very happy.
Yes, put that on my gravestone.
Yes. And I would donate my organs to David Letterman because he said such a nice thing about it.
Take my intestines, Mr. Letterman.
Yeah.
They are yours.
I mean, Downey wrote Camping with Barry White, which is a classic segment from early Letterman days. And they did a bit that I did not know, because I think this was maybe a shade before I was watching Letterman. They did like a series of sketches about the world's largest vase.
This one I don't remember at all, but
yeah.
It was a thing where, like, they just got in. It was like this running gag about the world's largest vase.
Yeah, like, and then there was somebody somewhere who was advertising this as a tourist attraction, and they, like, bring it to the Letterman show, or they create a duplicate of it. I don't know.
Yeah, they made a whole thing about just a large vase. Like, you would think, well, how much comedy can you mine from just a really big vase?
And it all the comedy, Darren. All the comedy.
But it's just a big vase. How's this funny?
They had, like, children's letters to the world's largest vase. And they talked about how he's doing things that are just deliberately wasting the audience's time. It's so wonderfully stupid. And that's the sort of thing you can get away with when your show is airing in the middle of the night, like Letterman, where he was on from 12:30 to 1:30.
A beautiful time to be alive.
And yeah, your audience is like stoners and insomniacs or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim Downey is credited for inventing the top 10 list.
My God.
My God, right?
Wow.
Right? Like, everybody knows the top 10 list.
And I know that when they originally conceived the top 10 list on The Letterman Show, they thought, oh, this is going to be a thing that we do for the next 2 weeks or something. But no, it was a thing that the Letterman Show did for the next 30 years.
And it just became a staple of the show, which is insane.
Yeah.
That is, like, he's the one behind all that. That's phenomenal.
And he attracted other great writers to Late Night.
Right. Which,
I mean, incredible. And then, but he's not at Letterman for that long. He gets there in 82, leaves in 84. And he becomes the head writer on The New Show, which was the new show that Lorne Michaels did during his 5-year hiatus from Saturday Night Live. Canceled after 9 episodes.
Yeah. There's a reason that a lot of people, when you mention The New Show, they don't really know what you're talking about, because it really was like just like a flash in the pan type of thing.
The Dana Carvey show of its day.
Exactly. Have you ever watched any episodes of The New Show?
I have not. I've never, like, gone looking for them on YouTube. I've, as far as I know, it's never been released on home media. So I know of it, but I don't think I've ever seen any of it. So it was a little before my time, because I was still pretty young in the early 80s.
Interesting. So. Yeah, like, I mean, from what I've seen, it has a lot of good people on it. Has a lot of the SCTV people on it. But so, you know, they're all hilarious, like, there's, you know, John Candy and, you know, late great Catherine O'Hara. And so, like, I was like, well, how could this fail? And it just, like, everybody agreed.
I'll tell you how.
Oh, give us that straight talk.
No, I mean, they were saying in the doc that maybe some of the problem was that it wasn't a live show. So maybe it was like you're a little more forgiving of the rough patches in a live show, I think.
Right.
So if there's like a technical screw up or something, or maybe the material isn't as polished as it could be, you're like, well, they did throw this together inside of a week. So,
yeah, fair enough, I guess.
But I don't know. I can't say with any degree of certainty. I'd be curious to at least check out The New Show and see what it was like. So,
yeah, I'm sure it's on YouTube or something. We can just give it a look. See, maybe we'll do an episode on it. Yeah. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. 9 episodes we could maybe do. Was it an hour show or a half hour show?
I don't know. I got, all right, yeah. Maybe. All
right, if it's a half hour show, then that's like 4.5 hours of material. If it's like an hour show, that's 9 hours of material. That's a lot.
Yeah. Listeners, chime in. Do you want us to do The New Show or not? If you do, let us know and give a 5-star review.
But we still reserve the right to say no.
Yeah, yeah. Give us a 5-star review and we'll think about it. We're not definitely going to do it.
9 hours, man. That's a lot.
Yeah, actually it is. That's like a job.
That's like, give us a 5-star review. Send us a check in the mail.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Give me a P.O. box.
Yeah, we may need some payola in order to make that new show episode happen. So yeah,
exactly.
You know, cold hard cash, unmarked bills. In his briefcase, no cops.
So we got SNL, we got Letterman, we got The New Show. New Show doesn't work. So okay, so that's done in 84. So 84, he goes back to SNL. By 1985, he's the head writer of SNL.
Yes, so, just like that.
Yeah, so now he's back. He's doing other classic sketches. He's doing like Hans and Franz camping, the David Spade's receptionist character. Oh. And you are.
Yeah, and he just has this gift of making sketches better. And actually, as a head writer, he introduced a new thing in the writing room about rewrite sessions on Thursdays,
yeah.
Which is something they never did until Jim Downey made it a thing.
Yeah, that's so wild to think that SNL had like was going to air with first drafts. And yeah, there's something to be said for the spontaneity of it. But I mean, Downey was like, oh, yeah, we could craft this stuff a little more.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I would say he was right.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just because whenever you do the first draft of anything, you know, it's usually never the best.
I was reading the other day, there was some writer, John Schwartzwelder from The Simpsons, who was saying, like, what I do, I just write the crappiest first draft there is because, like, writing isn't fun, but rewriting can be really fun. So I just write the crappiest draft I can, the most cliched dialogue. I don't think you should do that, Homer. Homer does that. And then the next day I come to that and I have, it may be a crappy script, but it is a script. And then I can go in and start crafting it and adding original funny jokes to it. So he gets all the rough part of it out of the way as quickly as he can. And then he gets to do the fun part, which is the rewriting.
Interesting. Oh, I never thought of that.
So
okay.
That's what he says. That's what he says works for him. So.
Oh, wow. All right. That, I just might implement those teachings into my writings.
Yeah. And so. I mean, Jim Downey apparently was dropping pearls of wisdom like this on SNL, and people were saying things like, well, if Jim thinks it's good, it must be good. So, because that's how trusted his taste was.
Yeah, yeah. Like, cast members just line up to talk to him and have him look at his stuff. I mean, they talk about Jim writing the George W. Bush sketches with Carvey, coming up with the... Yeah. Not going to do it, and then morphed.
And then Carvey's in his performance kind of took that and adapted that, and it became nah ga da, and just so he's like pushing it in the performance, which is pretty incredible. Yeah,
right. And I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, with this doc, they did that. They talk about kind of like little mundane things too, like the goo game. Where they just like, we're in the writing room doing just when they were thinking of ideas, they just like toss this sticky ball against the wall and like throw darts at it. And like that would help them kind of come up with ideas in a weird way. I think also Conan said he justifies it by saying in comedy writing, screwing around is like 80% of the job and it's somehow necessary.
Yeah. And I get that. I mean, they talked earlier about how like Letterman would just like throw pencils into the linoleum tile on the ceiling.
Nice.
Which, I mean, yeah, that's, and so there's like just dozens of pencils wedged up in there. They talk about how like Downey was so, I guess protective is the right word about, you know, and he would go through his sketches of people like almost line by line, like telling them how they should say the line. But like so many famous SNL sketches that Nakada, the canteen boy,
oof,
where Alec Baldwin is the scoutmaster, is
coming on
to Adam Sandler's Canteen Boy.
That sketch makes me uncomfortable every time I watch.
I think it's supposed to, yeah.
Okay, good. So mission accomplished.
The Chippendale sketch with Charlie and Patrick Swayze. That's Downey.
That's a historic. I would say that's a historic sketch for sure. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's sort of one of those instant classic SNL sketches, and it's one that you see at least a few seconds of in all the anniversary specials.
Yeah, you see anniversary specials, best ofs. I know at first, I think Odenkirk, when he was on the writing staff, was kind of down on it because it just seems like the joke is, oh, fat guy dances and
right.
But I see where it's coming from, but I really think there's more to it than that.
Well, I've heard other people talking about it, and I don't remember who had this observation, but like what really makes that sketch work is that Farley can dance.
Yes.
He has good moves, but he does have, you know, he's heavy set and he's not built like Patrick Swayze. So
no, he is not.
So but that makes it funny. And they say that in the sketch. They're like, hey, Barty, you've got all the moves, but your body is fat, gross, and disgusting.
And he's listening like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good constructive criticism. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
And like they had a sketch that he co-wrote with Conan O'Brien, which this was another one I did not remember, where it's Abe Lincoln and physically fighting with Mary Todd Lincoln, and Roseanne is playing
Todd Lincoln. Like, you crazy bitch, I'll kill you.
Yeah. And they like bust through a wall in another sketch, I think.
I vaguely remember that one, but yeah, that one was buck wild.
Just wild.
They
talk about how Downey was like eventually fired as a producer at the end of the 94-95 season, but he came back like a month or two later to do Update with Norm Macdonald.
And the cat came back.
So he's essentially been fired twice already, and he's only about halfway through his tenure at SNL.
Yeah, he was like the head writer for 10 years, which I think was it's still the longest any head writer has ever been in that position, if I'm not mistaken.
In late night comedy terms, that's
lifetime.
Like 200 years, I mean.
Yeah.
Because that's got to be a job with a high burnout rate, but
I'd imagine so, yeah.
And I think he even says that like he was a little burned out by the time he got fired, but then he comes back to just work on Update with Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, and then that's when he finds this great partnership with Norm, because like even in the doc, they say, yeah, the two of them, their comedic sensibilities were like perfect in tune.
Yeah.
Like I still think about that number one on the college charts better than Ezra, uh-huh. Number two, Ezra.
Yeah.
I still think about that joke like once in a while.
And yeah, Downey says, like, of all the people that I worked with at SNL, Norm was the guy I was most simpatico with. And they show clips of Norm's time at Update, and everybody remembers that era fondly, but it seeing those clips, it really reminded me that he wasn't always getting some big laughs, but Norm was the type of performer that didn't really care if he got laughs or not, because he was just like, I still think it's funny, you're wrong if you're not laughing.
Yeah, no, I remember those years. I remember it, like, I mean, now we look back on Norm and like a lot of people like were saying, oh, he was amazing, he was a comedy genius and all that. Mm-hmm. But no, I remember people were like kind of either hot and cold on Norm. Either you got it or you didn't. I remember a lot of people being like, I don't get what he's doing. What is,
and that apparently was a lot of the problems that Don Ohlmeyer, the NBC exec or producer, had with Norm and him doing Update in particular, in addition to all the OJ stuff. Because
OJ stuff. What did OJ do?
Friends with OJ. Yeah.
What did OJ do? Something happened. Is he okay?
Yeah, something happened. Yeah, something happened. Just give O.J. Simpson and White Bronco a Google.
All right. O.J. Yeah. Simpson, White Bronco. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
First I'm hearing about this.
Yeah, I know. It's a shocker.
Wow.
It's kind of an obscure story.
I think you know a guy.
On it.
Yeah, but yeah, it is a thing where Norm, like, even I noticed for a while, like, I mean, I get it, because, like, at the time, OJ was huge news. He was everywhere. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, you couldn't escape OJ Simpson news. But there was something about the way Norm would just like really get into those OJ jokes and really kind of.
He was telling them with relish. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there was that one scene where it was like,
hey, watch it. That's my lucky stabbing hat.
Was OJ high on speed the night of the murders? Absolutely not, says Cochran. And a simple test from any of the blood found at the crime scene will prove it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And then when OJ Simpson was found not guilty in the criminal courts, Norm opened like the next weekend Update with, well, murder is now legal in the state of California.
He did not
let up at all. And he was relentless. There probably wasn't an Update that Norm Macdonald did during that whole time frame where he didn't tell at least one O.J. Simpson joke.
Yeah, like, I mean, at one point, one thing is like, oh, wow, he's really going after him. And
yeah,
it's like to a point where it's almost kind of like, all right, we're really going this far this often. But And another point, it's like, wow, he really doesn't care. He doesn't give a fuck. That's kind of cool.
And the premise of every joke was always like, oh, yeah, OJ is guilty. He is obviously guilty. He is incredibly guilty. I mean, they never even had a joke with that even acknowledged the possibility that he might be innocent. And they're showing clips of Don Ollemeyer, who is a real life friend of OJ Simpson, saying like, well, OJ is going to be found innocent. And yeah, he'll be like totally exonerated. And it's like, ooh, this is aged well.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah. But I do almost like that righteousness that Norm had, where it's like, no, yeah. Like, he's clearly guilty. You're crazy if you think he's innocent. Like, yeah. I'm not the one in the wrong. You're like, you're out of your mind because you think like he may not be guilty.
And you know, look, I get where Ollemeyer was coming from. They were friends. Apparently, OJ kept all his abusive behavior like really well disguised, or he was able to charm his way out of it, or whatever.
Really?
So, I get that there are people in his life who had no freaking idea what was going on, but. At a certain point, you got to be like, come on.
Yeah, like you got to cut ties at some point.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, look at that DNA evidence, buddy.
Come on, man. But yeah, then OJ was found innocent. And this is that whole era where Don Ollemeyer wanted Norm and Jim just fired off the show. And like, he kind of went over Lorne's head, which was one of the few times I think Lorne was kind of powerless to like control his own show, which I
thought. Yeah, Lorne says like, I think that was the only time I was overruled, and he's trying to like sort of quench the fire a little bit, and he's like, well, look, let's give it till the end of the season. We'll decide over the summer, and then like Ollemeyer's like, no, you got to get rid of him now. You got to get rid of him now, and it ultimately ended up with Jim Downey getting a phone call saying, Chris Farley is dead and you and Norm are fired.
Wow. Because, those two things did happen around the same time. I was like, right. That's,
yeah.
Wow.
And of course, you know, once he's hit with that first bit of news, he doesn't care too much about the second bit of news.
Yeah. That's a good news, bad news tactic. That's how you ease.
That's a horrible news. Horrible news.
Oh, tactic. Is it? Yeah. I guess you're.
Yeah. That's like. We'll tell you this really horrible bit of news, and then this first bit of horrible news won't bother you quite as much.
I don't know how to do good news, bad news.
No, you obviously not, I would say.
Obviously not.
Obviously not. So please never call me with bad news.
Yeah, well, check. I did like how they showed that clip of Norm talking to Letterman about how it all went down. Mm-hmm. And it's like Norm was like, oh, I got a call. He said, oh, I got some bad news. And he said, you're fired from SNL. I was like, oh, wow, that is bad news. And it's like, why am I fired? And it's like, oh, well, you're not funny. I was like, oh, holy Lord, that's even worse news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great. I mean, Norm was one of a kind, I think.
He was. R.I.P.
And amazingly, Downey comes back to the show again after this.
He just has 9 lives. It's so wild.
I mean, I guess being a writer and not being the performer of this material most of the time, he's able to be a little more under the radar than, say, a Norm Macdonald was. But and he's come back. And that's the other amazing thing about Downey is he's gone through so many eras of the show, and he's worked with so many of the cast members, the original cast up through the Dana Carvey, John Lovitz years, up through Will Ferrell, and then up through like when guys like Bill Hader and Fred Armisen were on the show.
Yeah. No, he's seen the shows in so many iterations. And he got rehired by Lorne in 2000, like as soon as Ollemeyer retired. Right. I think even
to make out with Jonah Hill.
Yes. Oof. That
in a Lonely Island sketch.
They really went. Wow.
They are Frenching deeply. Yeah. There was a thing where Jonah Hill has fallen in love with Andy Samberg's dad, and Jim Downey is playing Samberg's dad because he looks very like suburbanite dad.
Yeah, just tonsil hockey.
You know, that was another thing that kind of amazed me about the doc is like Downey's had a lot of different looks over the years.
He has,
and even in the interview segments, they were obviously filmed over a longish period of time because he looks different in some of the interview segments. Like in some, he's got the mustache. Mm. He's got the whitish hair. Other times he's got the darker hair. So yeah. he's changed up his look a few times.
I mean, I did wonder if that's because of, because I mean, they also mentioned like he, Jim Downey, is also a very good actor, and he's kind of, you know, kind of shown his acting bona fides in certain, like did an episode of Veep, and of course, Billy Madison, and he's done the Paul Thomas Anderson film, There Will Be Blood. And he was recently in the most recent Paul Thomas Anderson film, One Battle After Another.
Wow. I mean, so, yeah, so he's like part of the Paul Thomas Anderson troupe now.
Yes, the PTAU.
Yeah, and he's married to Maya Rudolph, so there's another connection.
There it is.
So
it's all there.
Wow.
It's all there. Connected
and, like, and then, I mean, they're showing a clip of a favorite sketch of mine, the It's a Wonderful Life sketch from the William Shatner episode, and I think it was 86, where it's the lost ending of It's a Wonderful Life, where everyone in the cast just go to beat the shit out of Mr. Potter.
Yeah, see, I did the, I mistakenly, I watched that sketch before I saw It's a Wonderful Life.
Wow.
So for me, so for me, I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. And then I saw It's a Wonderful Life, and I was like, oh, okay, no, it's justified.
So you had no context for that at all? Did you, did you know what It's a Wonderful Life was?
Kinda, yeah. I mean, I knew it was about like a guy who gets to see what his life is like without him, or the and but like I didn't know anything about Mr. Potter, really. So to me, it's just like a bunch of people beating up on a elderly man in a wheelchair.
Yeah, and then you like, watch the movie, and you're like, oh no, nobody ever positively finds out that Potter stole that money, and it's what, like $50,000 or something?
$40,000, $50,000? He got away with it. Fuck that dude.
He essentially gets away with it. And, it's, and yeah, I mean, George Bailey is fulfilled, and he realizes how loved he is and all that, and that's a beautiful ending, but Potter gets all fucking away with it.
Potter learns nothing. He stays, he gets away with it scot-free.
Not brought to justice at all.
There's no comeuppance. Fuck that dude.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
Fuck that dude.
Fuck you, Mr. Potter.
That wheelchair-bound Lionel Barrymore. Fuck him.
Fuck you, Ironside.
I wonder what Drew Barrymore thinks of that sketch.
I don't know. She's like, oh, my papa.
That was sort of like her grandfather, I think. Because, like, wasn't her dad... I can't remember all the ins and outs of the Barrymore family. But...
Yeah, I can look it. I'll look it up, but yeah, it's
You don't have to, but
okay, thank God.
I mean, they're somewhere in the same bloodline, but so like they're showing the It's a Wonderful Life sketch. We're about 50 minutes into the doc now, and I'm literally thinking like, maybe I'm not an SNL fan. Maybe I've just been a Jim Downey fan all this time.
I mean, he also they showed a clip of the. The honest, what, Joe Montana, The Honest Man?
Oh, yeah, sketch? Yeah. Joe Montana, The Honest Man.
Yeah. That's one of your favorites.
Admit, I'll be upstairs masturbating. One of my favorite sketches.
I'll be upstairs masturbating.
Gee, I want to jump her bones. I wish he'd jump my bones. So funny.
Jump her bones. Like, no one says that anymore. What? We got
to
bring
that. They don't say it enough. No. Right? No. We need to bring that back. Not just the phrase, in general.
Yes.
People jumping each other's bones.
I've said that time and time again.
I don't think people do that anymore.
Damn it.
Or maybe just not with me. I don't know.
Oh, boy. All right. Anyway, well, now.
And then we find out around this point, his college roommate, Lawrence O'Donnell.
Crazy.
I mean, it's like, okay, well, yeah, that kind of tracks. Like, comedy writers and newscasters, they both went to Harvard, and yeah.
It makes
one
sense.
One goes on to like MSNBC and The West Wing, and the other one becomes one of the most beloved comedy writers of our time.
Must be nice. Must be nice. But yeah, so Downey gets hired in 2000 as a specialized writer focusing on political comedy and cold open. So like he's focusing on the GWB stuff, and of course, the son George Bush Part Two. That we got around that time.
Strategery.
He gave us
lockbox. Yeah.
He gave us strategery. Which was like a real thing. Which became a real thing.
Yeah, and that became like sort of the 2000 equivalent of viral.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I mean, it's in they're showing like news articles about that, and so he kind of. helped define the persona of George W. Bush with the general public, kind of the in the same way Sarah Palin was years later with the, you know, I can see Russia from my house.
So. Yeah, absolutely. It's weird how much he's just kind of like he's always just kind of been in the background, but like he's given so much to the our lexicon and to added to the just the pop culture of the world and whatnot. Yeah.
And they're talking about how he helped create kind of the expectation of political cold opens on SNL and debate sketches during election years. I don't think SNL, like, okay, they did that famous Ford Carter debate sketch.
Right.
Back in the day, back in the Chevy Chase days. Right. And then I don't think they really did a debate sketch again until, like, the 1988 election when Aykroyd came back to play Bob Dole.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't remember for sure. I could be wrong on that because, like, I wasn't watching it throughout the 70s and the early 80s. But political sketches were sort of few and far between before that era.
Yeah.
And now they're just expected.
Yeah. Like it seemed like every cold open has to be political. Especially recently, like, you know, we've talked about on this podcast 100 times before where like almost every sketch has had Trump in it or Hegseth in some capacity.
Right.
And that just seems like the norm now. It's wild.
Yeah, it's the norm. Yeah.
Oh, I see what you did there. Hey, Norm, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Talking about Jim Downey, right?
Yeah, you know, that OJ guy killed his wife there.
Yeah, he's really guilty.
Yeah, really killed her. Crazy. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the ghost of Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
But yeah, he still stayed on the show until he officially retired in 2013.
Yeah. And even then, on the 40th anniversary, they talk about how he comes back and does a sketch with Bill Murray where Nick the Lamb-Singer is singing the Jaws theme. And they talk about how it's basically been a 40-year gestation for this sketch since Jaws was in theaters in 75.
Yeah, like it's something that they've been working on since, like you said. And I think they had like Emily Spivey helped him work on it and Rudolph. And yeah, I remember this being one of the highlights of the SNL 40. Mm-hmm. Guys, go back and listen to our recap on that episode.
Yes.
But yeah, Jaws, get away from me.
And yeah, so like finally we have Downey just saying like, I spent 32 seasons on SNL. I had 3 or 4 separate careers at SNL, which is a great way to look at it. I mean, because again, he spans so many eras.
Really does.
It's unreal when you think about it. And then he says, like, sort of in passing towards the end, he's like, yeah, I became a father just before I left. I became a grandfather. I met the love of my life there. And I'm like, well, I kind of wish we could have gotten into that a little bit.
Right? Exactly. Like, they just glossed over. I mean, maybe he just wants to keep his private life private, which
maybe
I understand.
That was his choice. But I kind of wish I could have heard about that. Like, hey, how did you becoming a father affect your comedy? How did getting married and settling down affect your comedy? I wanted more. I wanted more. I wanted to suck the marrow out of this documentary.
I get it. No. Like maybe I would have just assumed it's just because he didn't want to be too forthcoming with all the stuff. I mean, the way he kind of described him leaving at the end is like, yeah, you know, I did all this stuff, and you know, it's nice to just kind of Irish goodbye it and just kind of leave it to the new class of writers and kids coming up. You left your mark, you did your thing, and then you just gracefully bow out.
And I like that. I respect that. I think there's something very honorable in that. I get that. He's not a guy who needs or wants a lot of fanfare, it seems like. I mean, he might be vaguely embarrassed by this documentary. I don't know.
He might be, but...
I mean, he says early on, like, the general public doesn't want to hear a writer talk. and we're hardcore comedy nerds.
We're not the general public.
Yeah, so we're not the general public. We're not like most people. We're not like the other guys.
Yeah.
We're cool. Special.
Yeah, we're cool. We're cool. We're hip. We're with it.
I'm a loader, Dottie. I'm a rebel. I don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me.
There's a lot of things about me you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, in this doc, you know, Lauren says, calls Downey the best political humorist alive. He says he's he said he was the voice of the show during the first 20 years.
And he's also not, he doesn't seem to have a particular axe to grind with one side or the other. He's not like, oh, all Republicans are evil or all liberals are idiots or whatever. He seems to be able to find the funny in all sides.
Yeah. And like that's somebody, I mean, even though I lean kind of left, like that's somebody at least I can, you know, kind of have a conversation with or see more eye to eye with than somebody that's hardcore the other direction, where you can see the faults in both. If you see the faults in both, I'd be like, all right, I can talk to you.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Oh, and of course, in the doc, Bill Murray, who we shared an office with, he called him the best writer he ever worked with, which is wow. Just
Bill Murray and Letterman and Lorne Michaels and I mean, and there's so many other people who pop up in this doc, like, you know, Adam Sandler, John Lovitz, Dana Carvey, Molly Shannon, Maya Rudolph, Emily Spivey, just wow. And it's just incredible that all these people love Downey so much that they're willing to come out and say all these nice things about him.
He's your favorite comedic performer's favorite writer.
Yes. That's favorite comic's favorite comic.
Favorite comic's writer. Favorite comic. And yeah, and then that's the doc. Like I really got a kick out of this. Really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if I wasn't a comedy nerd, if I would like it as much as I did, but
yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, but like I would definitely say if you're an SNL nerd, if you're a comedy nerd, if you just appreciate,
if you just listen to an hour long podcast on us talking about an hour long documentary, I think it's safe to say you are a comedy nerd of some kind.
Yes, so yeah. I would highly recommend this doc for sure.
I would too. It is streaming on Peacock. It's great stuff. It's a quick watch. It's even quicker if you're not like occasionally pausing it to take notes for your podcast.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, and at the end, they resurrect Alex Trebek from the dead. So
yeah,
that's cool.
That's all. So just stay there for that.
His comedy resurrects the dead. I mean, how about that, huh?
Yeah, how about that? Yes, comedy can bring back the dead. It's a necromancer.
But they're showing him. Alex Trebek asking a question about Jim Downey about, I think it was something he did with Letterman.
The top 10 list.
Yeah, talking about how he invented the top 10 list. So, I mean, come on. And they also show like his viral moment with Conan O'Brien from a year or two back where he's like, Jeffrey Epstein, the financier.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I have some bad news for you there.
Yeah, dude. I mean, and just watching that clip is amazing because you can see Downey. He like switches tacks kind of halfway through. Like he starts out where he's like doing his intro to Conan O'Brien. And he's like, look, I don't judge Conan O'Brien by what he's done. And then he kind of switches tacks to, oh, wait, what happened with Jeffrey? Well, it's very simple. Let's call up Ghislaine Maxwell and clear this up. And Conan's brilliantly playing straight man to both. And he's like, no. We're not going to. Why are you calling him by their first names?
Yeah, you're in the wrong here.
And again, he's doing it wonderfully deadpan. He's never breaking character. He's never like, oh, ha, we have fun. No, he commits and he just goes whole hog. And I love that, man.
Yeah, that's Jim.
That's great. Jim Downey. That's great. Yeah.
So, yeah, guys, give the doc a watch. Downey wrote that on Peacock.
Yeah.
But yeah, what did our fans think on the Blue Sky, the peoples?
Well, let's see. Well, first of all, I'm surprised we have fans, but okay.
We do. We got like two or three guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So, hi, guys.
Yeah. We know most of our fans by first name. So.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. On a first name basis. So. We got John Anias here from burtonesque.bluesky.social. It says, a doc focusing on one of the greatest and most influential SNL writers, author of some segments I return to laugh myself stupid a lot, full of appreciation and kinship from those he's influenced. There was no way I wouldn't love this.
Mm.
It says, I could watch docs like this on many of the show's other Hall of Fame writers, Jack Handy, Rosie Schuster, Paula Pell, etc. But I'm replying to a post about an SNL Nerds episode. Of course I would watch more docs about comedy writers.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, do you think we would get any other like docs on SNL comedy writers? I mean, who do you think it would be deserving of one?
I think those are all good suggestions. Jack Handy, who is of course the guy behind Deep Thoughts. He's had an interesting career. I know he started Deep Thoughts on Michael Nesmith's television parts.
Oh, really?
He kind of carried that over to SNL.
I did not know that. I would think maybe Michael O'Donohue, too.
O'Donohue, yeah. I mean, the problem there is, you know, Mr. O'Donohue is not around anymore. Yeah. But, yeah, you could make a neat doc about him. I used to have a biography of Michael O'Donohue. What was it? Mr. Mike.
Okay.
I can't recall the author offhand. But, he had an interesting life.
Okay, yeah.
Paul Pell, she's great. She's another mainstay SNL writer, kind of broke out as an actress after she left the show. Rosie Schuster, who was, I think, the first female writer on SNL.
I can't go that high in my throat. Yeah. I think you're right. I believe you're right.
I think I am.
I mean, Rosie Schuster would be good. I mean, maybe even Tina Fey, or I don't know. Like, listeners, let us know. Who do you think would be, what writer do you think would be deserving of their own documentary?
I mean, you know, like, we got guys who were SNL writers and became famous on their own later on, like Conan O'Brien, Bob Odenkirk.
That's true.
Greg Daniels.
Ooh.
You know, goes on to co-create the American version of The Office. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good one.
I mean,
there's
just so many great writers who've gone through SNL.
I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, technically, Chevy started off as a writer and he got his own doc. So you could say him as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've had a Chevy doc.
There you go. Yeah, he was. All right.
But, you know, he said we weren't smart enough to figure him out. So I'm not
gonna. Oh, Chevy. And, and I guess that's it. I guess that's the episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast, as always. You know what? We have something to promote, too,
this time around. Oh, yes, we do. And then I got a little something after that. But, yeah, well, tell us what you got going on.
Okay, so what I've got going on, if you're in the tri-state area, the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, I will be hosting a show at the Montclair Comedy Festival this Saturday, the 24th? Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. 25th.
25th, yeah.
At 7 p.m. Just follow me on my socials. I'll put up all the info there. Mm-hmm. And I kind of dropped this on my socials, so I'll let you guys on the podcast know about this now. I'm gonna record an album. I'm gonna shoot a special. Like, I feel like it's high time.
Video?
You're gonna
shoot a special. Oh my goodness.
I know, on the videotapes, and I'm gonna record an album and, you know, maybe put it out on vinyl. You know, it's nice. like all the cool kids are into vinyl again. Who knows? But that's going to happen in later this year, probably October, definitely in the tri-state area, either in Jersey or in New York. Just follow me for all the info, and like, I'll keep you up to date at Darin Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yeah, and you can follow me on the socials. I'm not getting ready to record an album right now, but follow me anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Give me a little time. I gotta settle some other things.
Okay. So, I got some scores to settle.
There's some people who have to pay for what they've done to me.
Jesus. Okay.
But you can follow me and find out all about my score settling at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And yeah, be sure to check out Darin at the Montclair Comedy Festival this coming weekend.
So, yay.
That's going to be fun. And I have a little to share. I was talking with a friend of mine who lives over in Glasgow, Scotland.
Oi!
Louis Menzies. And he and I got to talking, and he knows that I do a podcast about SNL. He has not seen it because, you know, he's in Scotland. I don't think it airs. But he says that the SNL UK is getting a lot of coverage over there. And so I sent him a link to the episode that we did a few weeks back about the premiere episode of SNL UK. That's episode 380, if you want to check that out, where we talk about the Tina Fey wet leg episode. So he said, he told me, I have no frame of reference for SNL UK. He hasn't watched that, but he was nice enough to listen to our podcast about it.
Oh, nice.
And so I was like, okay, what is, how does this play when you have no context for what we're talking about? And he said, you know, I'm highly unlikely to watch it. I don't watch telly, but I listen to podcasts when I do DIY or watch the bunnies, etc. I guess he has pet bunnies.
What? Or does he mean like rabbit ears, like on antenna?
Maybe. I don't know. Or it's a euphemism for something. I'm not sure.
I'm watching the bunnies.
Yeah. He says, I am interested in your take, as you know, about the U.S. version. And all I know is that Saturday Night Live has a guy who does a great Trump impression.
Okay.
So then, and then he's like, he reaches out to me and he's giving me kind of a play-by-play as he's watching. And he's sort of correcting or giving me context for all the UK references that we didn't quite get.
Oh, boy.
He says the fall and rise of Reginald Perrin stars Leonard Rossiter, one of the greatest comedy actors in British TV history. Classic 1970s comedy series. One of my favorites, although I haven't seen it in years. Nonce is very common here. Okay, I remember that. That was the...
Pete Olay,
yeah. He says, nonce is very common here, as in Farage is a nonce. He says, you are both right that Friends was huge here. Mm. Mainly females who are quite addicted to it, my wife included. We know who Sarah Palin is.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And the question, do we like Americans, is yes, but all of Europe thinks you're insane, primarily because of Trump.
Guns are
going bankrupt from a simple medical intervention that costs us nothing extra after we pay our taxes. And honestly, fair.
Fair.
Fair, Bobby.
Hell, I agree with that.
I told him, like, I agree. And he says, oh, you know who David Attenborough is. He's my hero. I have a letter from him. He's a national treasure, probably the most popular person in Britain. He says, yes, Tina Fey is well known here. This is more stuff I don't remember. He says, Zephania is popular and well-liked here. I guess this was that Last Supper
sketch. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Zephania. Because there were a few British celebs that we weren't familiar with.
Right. Cilla Black, I know.
Cilla Black. He says, Cilla Black was crap. That was John Lennon's fault.
Wow. Damn.
And then he says, yes, well done. She hosted Blind Date. I don't know if he's still talking about Cilla Black or not. And he says, between the two of you, you're doing well.
Yay. Thanks, love.
Here he says, America's like that rather big and loud guy in your social circle who is very likable and good fun, but drinks too much, and you never know what incident he's going to incite, like get us thrown out of the bar or cause the police to come over and tell us, parentheses, him, to calm down. That's kind of how we see you as a country.
Again, fair.
Fair.
That's, yeah. Very fair.
And he says, in parentheses, you excelled yourself this week. Having your defense chief quote Tarantino is beyond satire. Yeah. that was J.D. Vance, I believe, who's the VP, who he said he was making a Bible quote, but he was doing the Ezekiel 25:17 thing from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, no, I think that was Hegseth, wasn't it?
Was it Hegseth that did it?
I think so. Right. But either way, I'm ashamed by both of them.
Yeah, there's plenty of hate to go around.
Yeah.
Let's see. We talk a little about guns. He says, we love lots of your culture and copy you a lot, as Saturday Night Live proves. And he talks about some of the American culture that he likes. He says, but I like the tone of your podcast. You're trying to explain the show and place it within British culture, which you're doing well, especially considering you're not British.
Yay.
When you compare to the original American version, you do so without any condensation. Like, we had so-and-so and the Brit guys are rubbish by comparison. There's zero of that. I wasn't expecting that. I just thought about it after about 20 minutes, but found it interesting. And I probably shouldn't have when it's a topic I know nothing about and have never watched. Let's see. We had a little more political talk. He says, yeah, very good show. Enjoyed listening to your open-minded and well-informed opinions. I'm not really much more informed on UK culture. Although Captain Birdseye is a very famous TV ad character comparable to your Colonel Sanders.
Mm.
It caused a minor Stooshy a while back when they recast him as a young guy. I guess Stooshy is slang for controversy.
Stooshy.
Okay. England has a proud maritime history, mostly a shameful one, but they don't think that. So they were particularly annoyed with the rebranding of their favorite sea captain after Nelson. Yeah, and yeah, he talks a little more about comedy and stuff. But I was glad that he enjoyed that he enjoyed listening to the podcast about a show he didn't watch, and he thought we did a nice non-condescending job to cover the SNL UK. So.
Yeah, we did. Oh, and I looked it up. Yeah, Stooshy or Stushy. It is a Scottish term meaning uproar or row.
Stooshy, I like that.
Have a bit of a row, yeah.
I learned Stooshy, and I learned nonce a few weeks ago. So yeah,
that nonce over there is causing up a bit of a Stooshy, isn't he?
Yeah, learning some UK slang.
That's I fun. Know. Look at us. We're cultured and shit.
Yep.
Right.
And yeah, the culture's gonna roll on next week. We're gonna SNL still on a break.
Still on a break, so we're gonna.
And you think, oh, you're finally gonna see Lauren, right? No, because we booked something else already.
That's right. We subvert expectations.
We subvert expectations. So we are gonna pivot to another movie starring an SNL alum. And should we reveal what it is, Darren?
Sure, why not? We're gonna go all the way back to 2005 and talk about the Jim Jarmusch film Broken Flowers. With Bill Murray, Jeffrey Wright, Sharon Stone, Tilda Swinton, Jessica Lange.
Wow.
And Chloe Sevigny.
Such a cast. Now, you have seen this before. I have not.
I remember.
You think you've seen it before.
No, I did. I saw this before.
You definitely saw it before.
I saw this at the theaters with some friends of mine. I'm going to reserve a comment until the episode.
That's right. You didn't like it too much the first time, I think you told me.
I wasn't too hot on it. I'll probably tell our. I'll probably talk about it next episode.
But we have a guest coming next week who says it's their favorite Bill Murray movie. We're gonna have somebody who loves it, somebody who wasn't so nuts about it, and somebody I'm coming to it more or less fresh.
Ooh, I can't wait to see what you think of this.
I know it's like Bill Murray, and he's kind of going back through his previous romantic partners for some reason. Like he has a long lost daughter or something like that. Is that it?
Daughter, or I haven't seen it in a while. A daughter or son, okay. And he's going through his old loves to find out more about the child.
Okay, all right, sort of like a middle aged high fidelity sort of thing. All right,
kind
of get into that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so. We'll see. I mean, I enjoyed the thoughtful, dramatic Bill Murray. I don't think I've seen many Jim Jarmusch films, so I don't know. I look forward to seeing what this is like. So,
okay, we'll see what we all think about this on the next episode of SNL Nerds.
Yeah, should we announce who our guest is, or just leave that for next week, just in case?
We'll leave that just in case. We'll. Well, it'll be a surprise to the listeners. So
yeah, they're an unreliable sort.
Absolutely.
They might bail on us the last minute.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, I got booked somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, you get booked. La di da. All right. Yeah.
Must be nice.
Must be nice.
Anyway, so yeah, next week we're gonna do Broken Flowers with Bill Murray. We'll find out all about that. We'll find out whose opinion is objectively correct.
Oh.
And who's horribly misguided. And maybe two out of the three. Who knows?
Two out of three ain't bad.
In the immortal words of Meatloaf. Anyway, that's next week. So join us then. And check out the movie and we'll find out what you think about it. And let us know. But until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.
Yeah.